Happy Open Championship Week, and welcome into this week's edition of the Golf Central Podcast presented by Callaway Golf. I'm Ryan Lavner. We're here to get you set for the year's final major. My colleague Rex Hoggard is one of the few reporters on the ground at Royal St. George's just outside of London. We'll get to him in just a moment. But first, how about Minwoo Lee earning his second career European Tour victory last weekend at the Scottish Open? He had a bag full of Callaway and Odyssey equipment, which we'll get to in just a moment. Lee made six birdies in a row on the front nine and then came through in the clutch on the first playoff hole, stuffing his approach inside of 10 feet. Now, Minwoo Lee's bag included an epic speed driver, which you may recall was also used by the two most recent major winners in Jon Rahm and Phil Mickelson. Also in Lee's bag is an epic speed 3-wood, Apex TCB irons, a full suite of Jaws wedges, a Chrome Soft X golf ball, and the same putter that fellow Aussie Mark Leishman uses, which is an Odyssey White Hot OG number one. Now, if you want a full deep dive into all the specs, check out a detailed What's in the Bag post on World of Wonder section on Callaway's website at callawaygolf.com/WOW. That's callawaygolf.com/WOW. Now, let's get into this Open Championship preview. I don't care if you call it the British Open. I don't care if you call it the Open Championship. I don't care if you call it the Open. It is the year's final major, a major championship, which I love dearly, probably my favorite tournament of the year. And unfortunately, I am not there. The guy who is there, and probably on a little bit of a delay here on this podcast, because he is in a hotel that was roughly constructed in 1900, is Rex Hoggard. Rex, how are things? How is the quarantine? How are you, first of all?
Apologies in advance for the Wi-Fi, because I'm sure it's not going to come across great at the Comfort Inn in Ramsgate, Kent, England. I'm doing well. It's been better than I expected. I can say this. I have been tested for COVID-19 five times in 5 days. So of all the things that I could complain about, the one thing I can say that, well, I know I'm COVID-free. So I'm good with that.
Did you have to quarantine?
I did not. So the way it worked out late in the game is those of us with NBC and Golf Channel who were going over for the coverage were included into, it's called the Elite Sportsperson Exemption. I know. Go ahead. Sure. Have your fun.
Sure. Yeah. Elite Sportsperson. That's exactly what I think of you.
Yeah. Go ahead. Have your fun. And so essentially it's the same thing that the players and the caddies are doing. You had to test before you leave. You had to test on day two and day eight. And then they give you these things called a lateral flow test, which I don't think we have these in the US. Maybe we do. But I have to take one of those every other day, and it's self-administered. And this one has a big long swab. Anyone who's taken a test knows what I'm talking about. The big long swab that goes up your nose, but it also goes to your tonsils. And I did it the first day, and I gagged myself. I almost threw up. I stuck it up my nose. I'm crying. I'm in tears because I want to make sure I'm doing this right. I did it the next day, same thing, because I want to make sure I get it right. And then on the day after that, the third day, I went into the clinic at the course to do the proper test. And the lady did the same thing and just barely glazed me. And I'm like, I killed myself. She goes, I can see. I think you
that
actually
sounds horribly blood. Uncomfortable that you have to administer this all by yourself.
All by myself. You wait for the test results. It's 30 nerve-wracking minutes while you wait for the strip to turn either blue or yellow. It is what it boils down to. So yeah, it's been an adventure. There's been a lot of players who clearly aren't happy with the protocols. I think when all's said and done, they're just going to be happy to be here and play a championship. But it's certainly, I was having this conversation with a player today, and what the situation we're in is 14 months ago, we were in a very similar place when the tour restarted and we were at Colonial. And everyone was locked down and you were wearing masks and you were being tested constantly and we didn't know what to expect. Over those 14 months on the PGA Tour in the United States, things have loosened up dramatically. I mean, 2 months ago, they stopped testing if you were fully vaccinated. They're going to stop testing this month. All players on the PGA Tour later this month at the 3M Open. So we're at a stage where I think the players had worked themselves into a position that, okay, we're finished. This is over with. We're done. We won. And I think it's been a very harsh awakening for guys coming over here.
And of course, Rex, it is ironic in the sense that there is, extreme protocols that media members need to endure, players, can have no more than four in their bubble, including themselves. And yet you're going to have 32,000 fans who are on site each day at Royal St. George's, which is by far the most of any tournament we've seen in this COVID era. I think Kew Island for the PGA Championship, they were pegging it somewhere around 15,000. It certainly felt like it was about 50 going down that 72nd hole with Phil Mickelson. So that is the great irony of this championship. It's not going to matter. This is all just pre-tournament conversation. This is not going to affect who wins this tournament on Sunday. It will feel very normal in the sense that you're going to have the same grandstands that you typically have on the 18th hole of an Open Championship with the yellow leaderboard, the horseshoe grandstand. It's going to be great. It's just, these are kind of the headaches that we've had to endure in player. It has been a player talking point over the past couple of weeks and the past couple of months. Can you paint a picture for us? I'm not sure. It doesn't look like, just from some of the visuals we've seen, that there have been very many spectators on the golf course so far. So can you address that? And also kind of from our perspective, what is the media presence like? Are you one of the few American golf writers who was there?
Yeah, and to your point that you were making before, the UK government also announced yesterday that next Monday, so a week from yesterday, they're essentially going to the same protocols that we have in the United States right now, where masks are going to be optional. And I think that the number that they published was that 70% of the population here is fully vaccinated. So I think that there's an irony in that as well, that look, we're a week away from this being a free-for-all anyway. It's going to be the Wild West here in 7 days, and it just seems weird. To your point, it was interesting. I got here on Sunday, where I went out to the course on Sunday because I was trying to beat up on jet lag. And I walked with Rory McIlroy, and it seemed like there was more people following him on Sunday than there were on Monday. And I think it probably has something to do with it, just the way the work week has fallen. My guess is on Thursday, that's the day when you're going to start seeing people. I think you're right, what you're seeing on TV. There aren't tons and tons of people out there. I don't think we'll start seeing that until the tournament proper. As far as the media thing goes, so here's the – and this is going to sound weird, but I'm actually not in the media center for the first time in my entire career. And the reason why is, as I explained, because I'm an elite sports person. Go ahead, fill in your blank.
Of course, of course you are.
Yeah, yeah. Because I have that elite sports person status, we're sort of inside the bubble. So therefore, I can't be around – the other people inside, our colleagues, the other writers who I'm around week in and week out. So that's
the ink stained wretches.
Yes. So that's wildly different. And some, for, you know, on some fronts, that's probably better. There's certainly plenty of people in there I don't want to spend any time around. But in some ways, it's worse. Like I couldn't sit in on the interviews today when all the guys kind of came to the press center, even though they're pretty much virtual anyway. And you just don't get the same vibe. I'm actually in the compound, which is just kind of a mud hole. But it's fine. It's just it's a totally different vibe.
It is certainly an interesting distinction, something we're not used to as media members who just a few years ago, before a lot of contraction in media, which was spurred on a lot by the pandemic. I mean, these used to be 250, 300 media types just in a huge white media tent. It was really its own little community there. I do want to get to the golf course. Listening to some of the players today, I was listening to live from coverage here on Golf Channel. I don't think anyone, Rex, it's fair to say, would peg Royal St. George's as their favorite golf course. And many, in fact, would probably put it down as one of the worst on the open rotation. This has been a long-held accepted belief, even back to Jack Nicklaus, I remember saying that the open venues tend to get worse the further south that you go. Brooks Koepka, in fact, said that he doesn't particularly care for it at all. What are players generally saying, besides Brooks Koepka, about this golf course? And what is it in particular that they don't seem particularly fond of?
I think most guys, I'm certainly team Brooks on this one. And I think most guys are team Brooks. And it's just kind of nondescript. Again, walking the practice round with Rory on Sunday, it seems like you go to other venues. I mean, St. Andrews is probably the unfair comparison here, but you and I have walked that course enough when you know from certain tees you aim at a certain steeple in town, or you're going to aim at a tower or the shore, or there's always something to sort of fixate yourself on as you make your way around the course. And it's such a flat, nondescript piece of land. That being said, I did talk to some players today, and what we're going to end up seeing this week, which sort of makes St. George's unique, is there's so much movement in the fairway. There's probably more elephants buried in these fairways than anywhere in the world as far as golf courses are concerned. Like, just walking it, being in the fairway, you get the idea of why this golf course is so demanding, because even the best hit tee shots are going to end up in difficult spots. And
oh, that's just maddening. That's maddening that you could stripe it on 14 holes, like literally center line of the fairway, and you're going to end up in the hay.
Oh, it's a very real possibility. In normal years, certainly in 2011, the last time I was here, in 2003, when it was here before that, when Ben Curtis won, it was wispy. And you and I do this every year. Like, we enjoy it. It's one of our most enjoyable weeks out of the year, where we sneak over early and we play the golf. And it, when it's a dry summer and it's wispy, you can play from it. It's fun. You can find
it. You can find it. Most importantly, you can find the golf ball. You don't have to pack two dozen balls just to get through a little boondoggle.
And it's not that way this week. It's your typical English summer, which has been cold and wet, and the rough is thick. And I actually heard someone talking about it on live from today about how they actually were thinking about cutting the rough a few weeks ago, but they were so afraid that things were going to dry out and you're going to end up with that wispy rough. Well, it didn't. It went the other way. And I was talking with John Wood, who's going to be one of our on-course reporters. He was pointing out that there's going to be guys who lose balls constantly. Even with there's plenty of marshals out there with plenty of people to sit and watch, it's going to be one of those kind of weeks where Bryson's talking about just hacking it out with a 60-degree wedge, and that gives you an idea of how thick it is.
So it doesn't have the history of, say, a St. Andrews. It doesn't have the gloriousness of a Portrush, which was the last Open Championship they had in 2019. It doesn't have maybe the views of a Turnberry, which is kind of sort of on the road to perhaps back on the road once the ownership issue gets resolved. It doesn't have, let's say, the grandeur or the great test that a Muirfield would be. And so players are just griping because it seems a little bit unfair. I think Rory kind of described it, at least in 2011, as a pinball machine. But if it is a little greener, it is a little bit more lush, I think some of the curiousnesses of the bounces would be reduced or not, maybe not eliminated, but it would certainly be reduced in the sense that you're not going to hit the middle of the fairway and go directly into the hay, right?
To a certain degree. And that's where they probably ended up getting lucky. There was plenty of rain yesterday. As the storm came through, there was a little bit of rain today. The rest of the week's going to dry out, so you don't know what's going to happen. And to be fair, I think most players will give this its due. And when you say it's the worst of the Open rotation, well, you're talking about 10 of the greatest golf courses in the UK. So if you're 10 on the list of the top 10, I still think it's a pretty good golf course, just to put it in contrast. That being said, you're not going to compare this to certainly St. Andrews. Turnberry was the one you brought up. Muirfield is probably the one most players are going to go to. But you and I can speak from experience on this. If you want to get into a nuanced conversation about Lynx golf, I was probably not a fan of Royal Troon until we had the opportunity to play it. And once we got out on the golf course, I think both you and I were under the same mindset that, wow, this is really cool. I mean, what a great golf course. It makes you think, and the cool bounces, and you could play so many creative shots. And I think to a certain degree, lesser than that, but to a certain degree, I think St. George's is that way.
To be clear, I thought Royal Troon's opening nine was a terrific golf course where the wind was predominantly off our right shoulder, down and off the right. The ball was going forever. You could play a nice, cute little draw. Once we turned back in the wind, if you recall, I believe I went 34-47, which if you played Lynx golf at all, particularly the golf courses that go out and come back, that's not all that uncommon for us recreational golfers to have splits, certainly on the nine holes, a little bit like that. That's enough about the golf course. That is incredibly boring, I believe, to get into, but it is a little bit of pre-tournament fluff. How about the guys who can actually hoist the claret jug on Sunday, as I usually do leading into a major championship on Monday scramble? I do list my top 10 favorites for the Open, since I know you didn't have an opportunity to read that because you've been busy on the ground there at Royal St. George's. Tell me, who would, maybe not go through your top 10, who do you think should be in, let's say, your top five?
I mean, I'll do the top five thing because that's what you love to do, but you're bearing the lead here. You realize that, right?
What's that?
Brooks.
What about him?
Brooks saved us. Brooks saved us today. He walked into the media center with the peacock feathers out, and he just doubled down. He's going to be a bully. He's going to be a troll, and I'm going to continue to be a bully, and I'm going to continue to be a troll, and this is why. He unpacked it all. He sat there and said that the reason he's got beef with Bryson is because when they got sideways in 2019 at the playoff event in New Jersey, that they had a detente. They sat down and said, all right, no more calling each other out in public. And I guess Bryson called him out again, and that was it. So the gloves are off. And I could not help myself, but I had to write it today. And look, there's going to be people, certainly people on this side of the pond, who are just going to cringe at this. But I would argue that there is not a better hype man in golf than Brooks Koepka. He's a lot of things. He's an extremely talented golfer. He has a gear in major championships that's difficult to understand and hard to quantify. But beyond all that, he can stand on a stage and he can pound his chest. And he is our Conor McGregor, and I'm all in.
I wish people would just stop asking about this. Like, they're not going to get paired. They're not going to get paired together over the first two rounds. And if they did, who cares? They would shake hands and then they would just go on their merry way. Like, this needs to happen organically. It needs to happen naturally. Brooks was asked five questions about Bryson today. There hasn't been any recent escalation in their ongoing feud, other than Brooks kind of taking a lighthearted jab once Bryson split with his caddy, Tim Tucker, at the Rocket Mortgage. Brooks seemed to go out of his way to say it's Caddy Appreciation Day. I mean, Ricky Elliott is a terrific caddy and he should be appreciated. And Brooks went out of his way today to even compliment him and say how big of an impact he's had on his career. But that was just kind of a lighthearted jab. There's been no serious escalation of this over the past couple of months. So just stop asking him about it, because then it puts Bryson in a difficult situation. If you want to talk about Brooks beating his chest and kind of taking pot shots at everyone, Bryson, to me, and I know you weren't in there, Bryson just seemed like it was really starting to affect him. You know personally, he's a sensitive creature. He certainly kind of spins himself in circles with some of the things that he says and does. But it does seem like it's starting to take a personal toll on him. And I think it's reflective in the results that you've seen out of him over the past couple of months.
That, well, to your point, Brooks was not asked about the beef, so to speak. I mean, that's not what started.
He was asked five times about Bryson.
But he wasn't asked about them getting paired together here. There was more. What started this was a Ryder Cup question. And his response, I wish we could run sound on this, because his response was classic. And it was like,
you realize it's only a week, right?
You realize it's only a week, right? And then the second response was, well, I can put up with anybody for just 1 week, which is probably the most backhanded thing. I mean, that's just short of saying, bless your heart in the South. I mean, that is just, you cannot get more backhanded than that. And look, he made it clear. He said it right on the thing. Like, we're not going to be paired together. It's not going to happen. Like, and this is Steve Stricker's headache. We're going to talk about this for the next few months, because he's going to have to find a way to keep these two separate in the locker room. Forget about pairing them together. He should just come up with two locker rooms for each of them and just let them go to their own corners. And by comparison, to your point that, yes, this is not going well for Bryson. He's not down for this. I think Eamon Lynch on today on Live From said it best, that when it comes to Twitter wars for Brooks, it's a blood sport. And Bryson's not built this way. He's going to lose this because he just doesn't have this gear, unfortunately. And you're right. You could see how it's affecting him. He was asked the same question. Would you be down with being paired with Brooks? His answer was yes. I think it would be funny. And I think he misspelled funny, because the actual answer was yes. I think it's awful, is what he would have said. Like, yes, that's never going to happen. That's insane.
Like, when Jordan Spieth and Patrick Reed used to get paired together at the Ryder Cup or the President's Cup, there was kind of this weird friction between the two. It wasn't necessarily that they disliked each other. It was the sense that they wanted to beat each other so badly that it really brought the best out of them. Pairing Bryson and Brooks together, it's not going to happen. Steve Stricker is not a moron. He's not going to do that and see how it goes, because it could be detrimental to the entire team. If they did, it would absolutely combust. There is nothing. Brooks would be disinterested. Bryson would be trying to flex. It would be the opposite of what we saw of Spieth and Reed, where they're trying to bring the best out of each other. That said, they're certainly not making Steve Stricker's job any easier. Why is this even a story 2 months out? All Brooks has to say is that, look, we have our differences, just like a lot of employees have differences of opinion with each other. But look, it's really important for me to kind of honor the red, white, and blue and represent my country and put these differences beside us because I really want to win back the Cup for America. That's all he has to say. And he, for some reason, he just can't bring himself to do it, which is why he is a bully and which is why I'm sick of this story.
I'm not going to defend him. He's a bully. He's trolling, like all of the things we can come up with and we can throw it out. I mean, it's, and he's to a certain degree, he's weaponizing this, which is also something that should probably be addressed simply because look, you're clearly going up against a guy who in this particular battle is overmatched. This is probably the time you should peel away. Yes, he could have defused it. He could have done a lot of things. He could have just declined to comment, which is normally the road of least resistance when an athlete gets to something like this where it's uncomfortable and they know there's no right answer. But instead, he just doubles down and he keeps piling on. Everyone wants to kind of turn the temperature down on this and he has no interest. And I get what you're saying. I understand that maybe for you and to a certain degree, until I sat down and listened to the press conference today, I had no interest in picking that back up a pen and writing this again for the umpteenth time. But as I listened to him and I thought about it, I kind of keep going back to the idea that it makes me a little uncomfortable. There's some cringy stuff in here, but I do think it's good for golf.
It's good for golf in the sense that, I mean, it's bringing in some of the Barstool bros who are interested only in conflict. And it does make golf maybe less staid than it typically has the reputation of being, just that these aren't all perfect gentlemen who get along great and are classy and sportsmen and virtuous human beings. Like they all have flaws. They all have different characters. They all have different personalities. They don't all have to commingle and coexist in perfect harmony, which is what I think kind of the sport has been portrayed as being. That's the only way that I see this being good for golf. Would ratings probably be significantly higher if it's Brooks and Bryson in the final group on Sunday? Of course. But I'm also not sure it's going to, I also don't think it's going to be a super meaningful spike. And I also don't know where it goes from here. Like why good for golf. Okay. Maybe they get paired together once and maybe there's a little bit of drama. Then what? I mean, this isn't going to inspire someone to pick up the game. It's good for the game in the sense that ratings might be higher, but how is it good for the game in any other respect?
I think the idea is that whatever is good for professional golf is good for golf in general. I don't know that I particularly agree with that, as we've sort of seen that over the last year, that professional golf, or I should say the last 5 years, professional golf has been in a very good place. And yet before the pandemic, golf itself was not heading in a great direction. So to your point, I see what you're saying. I would disagree. This is where I would diverge with you, saying that as we've watched the top golfs of the world step in and give people alternatives to the traditional experience, I think this is just another step in that direction. I've been to Top Golf, and they're the bros you're talking about. And they're the guys who are going to watch this and think to themselves, come on, let's go to Top Golf and work this out. Let's see who can hit it farther. Let's see who can win. Let's see who can hold.
And then you're going to have Brooks and Bryson actually get paired together, and nothing's going to happen. And all those Barstool bros will be surely disappointed. Yeah, and just say how boring golf is, and they're going to go back to doing whatever the Barstool bros do. When it comes to Brooke versus Bryson this week at Royal St. George's, I think we're probably both in agreement here that this is going to be a big-time stress test for Bryson. Yes, he played in the 2015 Walker Cup. Yes, he was the leading point getter for the American side. That was a long time ago. That's before Bryson added about 50 pounds of muscle. That was before Bryson had one of the highest apexes of any player on the PGA Tour. That was before Bryson had all of this other off-course drama, whether it's Brooks, whether it's caddy, that he had to deal with. So Bryson, to me, has no place anywhere on the list of favorites this week. Brooks, to me, though, is second, right behind John Rahm. I mean, when you look at Brooks Koepka, his body of work in the major championships, he has 3 top tens in the Open, and kind of his attributes, he seems like the prototypical Open championship winner, does he not? I mean, he hits his irons with a boring trajectory. He doesn't make huge numbers. He's talked about forever how he tries to eliminate double bogeys. He's okay with making a bogey, but a double bogey, as he proved at Torrey Pines, can be absolutely calamitous. He's a good putter from inside 10 feet. Doesn't get flustered by the bad breaks, which apparently you're going to get at Royal St. George's if you hit it right down the center stripe of the fairway. How do you feel about Brooks's chances this week, even though, I guess, as he said today, he first picked up a club since the Travelers on Sunday? That's 2 days ago. That's literally right before a major championship week begins. How are you feeling about Brooks's chances?
He's in my top five. I don't know if I put him at second, although that's probably splitting hairs, to be honest with you, at this point. But no, Rahm is the obvious choice for all the different reasons. I just think that he's sort of at a place mentally, what we saw him do at Torrey Pines, the sort of maturity, the things that didn't send him over the top, that didn't make him implode on that Sunday at the U.S. Open. He's pretty much the easy favorite. My second.
This is the player. That's the player you wanted to write about today, John Rahm, that you intended to write about.
I was all in, man. I was going to write how life changes once you show up at that next major after winning that first major. Like, it's a life-changing experience. I talked to Ernie Els about it. I talked to Darren Clark about it. It's just life changes. There's going to be differences. And I never even got to it. Never got to it because of the Brooks Koepka stuff, which we've moved on from. My number two, and I was talking with Nota Begay about this on the range as we were watching him hit balls, is Louis Oosthuizen. I just love the way he's played in the last two major championships, the way he plays links golf, the way he plays this particular Open Championship. The swing's so repeatable. It's beautiful. To your point, I don't know that he's the type of guy that's going to get frustrated by a bad shot, and he's going to get plenty of bad shots and bad bounces. I would put him in there. And then probably it's a split between Brooks Koepka and Rory for the next two spots.
Rory?
You know, yeah, I mean, I haven't seen him miss a shot this week. He just seems to be in a good spot. And I know we can sit here and have this conversation about Rory, but he still needs to be in the conversation. He still needs to be in the conversation when it comes to major championships. So whether if he's fifth or third on my list, again, that's splitting hairs, but I do think he has to be a player to watch this week.
The only reason I would consider Rory among my top 10 is his record in the Open Championship, which is phenomenal. Of course, he won in 2014. He didn't play in 2015, unfortunately, because of his kickabout injury, which was potentially one of the worst all-time breaks in golf history, thinking about what he would have done with the form that he was showing heading into the Old Course. Other than that, I mean, he's peppered it with top five, top 10 finishes before that surprising miscut at Portrush in 2019, where he made an absolute mess of the first hole and then had certainly all of Northern Ireland behind him trying to rally him to make the cut on Friday, which was a scene that you and I won't forget anytime soon. I do want to touch on Rory, though, because he has been an interesting case. You know, he's talked about the Players' Championship in March, how he kind of went down this rabbit hole they need to find himself out of. He just hired Pete Cowan to kind of work through some of his swing challenges. And then I don't think anyone, including Rory, expected him to win so early, which is what he did at Quail Hollow in May, a tournament that you were covering. But if you look deeper in those statistics from that week, he did not drive the ball well. He was one of the last in driving accuracy. His dispersion, his distance from the edge of the fairway was really high. So he did not drive the ball well. He just happened to have a great week with the irons and the putting. Other than that, he hasn't played particularly well. He just kind of hung in there. He had an opportunity to win at Torrey Pines without playing his best the last 2 weeks overseas at both the Irish Open and again last week at the Scottish Open. His driver, which was once a weapon, and he was arguably the greatest driver of his generation, has kind of betrayed him. He's not gaining strokes on the field like he once was. What's giving you confidence, besides his Open record, which we just touched on, what's giving you confidence that he can actually break through and win his first major in 7 years?
Kind of glossed over Torrey Pines, where he didn't have his best stuff and was still in contention.
He didn't. He'd be the first to admit that.
Some people would consider that a compliment. Tiger Woods has talked his entire life about not having his best stuff and still being in contention. He wears that as a medal of honor. So I don't know, you particularly need to gloss over that. And no, he drove the ball awful last week in Scotland. And he talked about that when we spoke to him on Sunday.
And the Irish Open.
There was some technical things that he and Pete Cowan had to work out. And this is his MO. We've seen it time and time again, where he can get through the technical things, getting them to the golf course, he gets distracted. He starts thinking about swing instead of just thinking about playing. He feels like he's at a point now where he can play. And I feel like this is a golf course where he can just start playing swing instead of swing thought. And that's the key here. And I believe he's at that tipping point right now. And he's done it before here. Look, there's some muscle memory involved. I know it's been a long time, but he has absolutely done it before. So, yes, he's in my top five.
All right, let's do some quick hits. Who you got as in terms of having a better finish? Xander Schauffele, Victor Hovland. Who has a better finish?
There's a Betfred right around the corner, as a matter of fact, since we're having this conversation.
Have you made your open bets? And is there a potential omen bet, as in the first player that you saw this week?
There is an omen bet. It was Harris Singles. I was sitting next to him on the plane on the flight over here. So that was an obvious one. That was a pretty easy
Harry,
one.
Harry flying first class on Delta. Of course he is.
Yes, of course he was. Delta One, very comfortable for both of us involved. And then the second one, the favorite was the second person I saw was Rory. So that's kind of where I fall into line here. But the favorite, I mean, anything, once you start talking about, and I have a friend of mine that kind of does this professionally, so it helps me through it when I come over here. You're not looking for the favorite. You're looking for the number. I'm just looking for a good number. And in this particular case of what you just asked me, Victor Hovland's the number, man.
What's his number?
I went to, he was 25 to 1, which I.
Oh, my gosh.
It was a gorgeous number.
That's free money.
Oh, absolutely. Each way, 10 pounds. How about that?
I'm not sure I have enough time. I'm going to try and pull this up while you keep gasping here. Who are some of the other guys that you were considering?
Well, you start going down the list. Louis Oosthuizen was someone that I took a look at, but I didn't like his number. I think he was 12 to 1 at that night at that time. Someone brought up
12 to 1 for Louis. What is Rahm?
I think he's the favorite. I know he's the favorite. I can't think of what the number is. Another one that came up was Webb Simpson. That looks very, very good, at least on paper when you consider.
No, thank you.
Well, but this goes to specifically St. George's. So it's we can sit here and talk about the Bombers all night, and that's what we do because it's sexy and that's what we like to talk about. However, if you look at the winners here, Darren Clark was 41 years old. He clearly was not one of the longer hitters on tour when he won here in 2011. And Ben Clark was at the bottom of the field in 2003 when he won here. So
Ben Clark, who's Ben Clark?
Sorry, Ben Crane. He won here in 2003.
Still not Ben.
Ben Curtis. Sorry, Ben Curtis.
Yes,
I got
there
my
he is.
Flustered. That's right. So I don't think this is the kind of course that lends itself to being overpowered. Bryson talked about this today, about using the Tiger from 2006 at Royal Liverpool idea of only hitting one driver and kind of bunting it underneath all the trouble. I'm sure he won't because he can never bring himself to that. But there is something to it that on this golf course.
All right. So it's giving me all sorts of geotag issues, so I can't pull it up. However, some guys who I would certainly consider, Patrick Reed, who I'm seeing at some places at 40 to 1.
That's good.
Matt Fitzpatrick, who nearly won last week, lost in a playoff at the Scottish Open, at 45 to 1. How about Scottie Scheffler, who had another good finish last week in Scotland, a player who is used to playing in the wind growing up in Texas, although he may be a little bit inexperienced in the links golf department. He is a player at 55 to 1 who would certainly be very appealing. And how about Mark Leishman? There's certainly been a spate of good Aussie winners or players playing well over the past couple of weeks, whether it was Cam Davis at the Rocket Mortgage. You think of Lucas Herbert on the European Tour winning the Irish Open. And of course, Minwoo Lee, as we touched on in the beginning of this podcast, winning last week at the Scottish Open. So Mark Leishman at 66 to 1 and Joaquin Neiman at 70 to 1 would also be appealing. Who are some other guys that if you wanted to plunk down a few pounds, you would certainly consider?
I think the defending champ, and I usually wouldn't go down this road, but I think Shane Lowry's played some pretty good golf, and this is obviously very, very odd circumstances with him coming back 24 months to defend his championship title. So it's a little bit different than it would have been otherwise. And then the other one is JT. And I think I saw the number on him was something along the lines of 15 to 1, which it honestly might be a little high based on how he's played lately. However, once you start talking into, and we're not going to turn this into a betting podcast, but once you start talking about the odds and what are you going to get top six if you go each way, I like that a lot.
DJ at 20-1, at least on the website that I'm looking at. I know he has not played his best golf. He did have an opportunity to win on this golf course. You're talking about muscle memory. He had an opportunity to win on this golf course back in 2011. I know he has not been great over the past couple of months, but he has been better. So I'm curious to see what he says about his game and how he likes the golf course when he meets with the media, although you will not be in attendance on Wednesday. All right. Who is your winner and what is the winning score?
Since I'm going to go with John Rahm, because I think that's the sexy pick, I actually think that's an easy pick. As far as the winning score goes, I think it's going to be the weather is going to cooperate. So it's going to be, I'm guessing, from 10 to 12 under par. And that's kind of the number that most guys are kind of banding around, because there's going to be some wind. But outside of that, it's not going to be nearly as windy as it has been in the past.
You're picking John Rahm.
I am picking John Rahm. Are you surprised that I'm picking the betting favorite? Really?
Yeah, I mean, look, it makes a lot of sense. He's, I think, 44 under par across his last 12 rounds. Although his Open Championship record isn't great, he doesn't have a top 10 finish in what is a very young career. I'm with you. He just seems like he's in such a great mental place. Clearly, it's all systems go in regards to his golf game. It's hard to go against the betting favorite. I feel like I pick him every single major, and I probably because I have. I still think Xander Schauffele is going to win a major, and so why not this time? Top seven finishes in two of the three majors so far this year. Played in the final group in 2018. He's gone away from that arm lock. He's finally gone away from the arm lock, which was just an absolutely disastrous experiment that probably cost him the U.S. Open. At Torrey Pines. So I think Xander, especially if you're going to look in that 10 to 12 under par range, Xander to me makes a lot of sense there. Obviously you cannot fire up the grill because you're staying in a Comfort Inn. I am curious, what kind of food have you been enjoying over your first couple of days outside London?
I was hoping you weren't going to ask me about the food.
Please. I mean, I'm dying not having my favorite muffins.
I'm not having the muffins either. So I'm eating in the compound. I'm not eating in the media center. So yes, I don't have your muffins, but I'll give you all 30 pounds on my daily card. So you can go buy as many muffins as you want. It hasn't been awful. We have stayed here.
Hasn't been awful. Now there's a ringing endorsement.
Yes, it's a ringing endorsement. And I think what it was, we had this conversation the other night, and you and I have been over here enough times. I don't know that the food is getting better in the UK, or if I'm just becoming more and more accustomed to it and it's just, okay, I'm going to eat crappy food. Right?
So what did you have? What have you had?
Well, I actually like Indian food, and it's kind of the dish. I mean, I think it's referred to as the national dish here in the UK. So I'm fine with that. And then there's a couple pizza places nearby. I will say this. So Sunday night was I don't know if you're aware of this, but there was a big kickball match on Sunday night for the Euro 2020 final. Yes, it was very exciting. I watched it in a bar, and it might have been the most entertaining. That was a long time. It must have been 3 hours, 90 minutes, 30 minutes, and then the shootout. It must have been the most 3 hours, entertaining hours of my life, because, I mean, everyone was drunk, and everyone was excited, and everyone was happy right up until the point that they're not. The second that last kick did not go in, penalty kick, did not go in. No one said a word. They paid their bills and they walked out quietly. That's the difference between American fans and English fans, because American fans probably would have broken something on their way out.
That's actually surprising, because considering the look of the faces on the fans in Wembley, like, I was sure someone was going to die. Like, you saw some of the social media clips of the fans trying to barge into the stadium, although I'm not sure what they were trying to accomplish. Because they would have found out quickly that wasn't a viable option since there was nowhere to go. Like, I was sure, like, it was just so frenzied and they were going to be so upset that, you know, that bar would have basically been lit aflame. But you're saying the case?
Nope, not at all. Surprisingly so. And everyone was friendly. And obviously when the English team scored, it was like 2 minutes in. So, you know, it was bedlam.
Shots all around. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. It was pandemonium all the way around. But I think what happens over the course of, let's say, 89 minutes, that you just get worn down and suddenly you come to the realization that this isn't going to happen again. And I can tell you this just from experience, and I saw this on TV, the semifinal match. I believe the English played the Denmark. And there was a Danish player who was asked about bringing the cup home, and that's like the big deal about – that's what they say in England, bring the cup home. And I didn't realize it. They've never – England's never won Euros. So the cup's never been here, and the Danish player being clever goes, has it ever been home? Well, apparently – You can't say that in a bar.
No, of course not.
One of the English fellas came up and talked to me, and I said it, and he didn't laugh, and it didn't go well.
Making friends wherever you go. That's terrific. Rex, I'm sure you'll have a great week out at Royal St. George's. Just a reminder that the 149th Open Championship will be shown live on Golf Channel, Peacock, and NBC Sports, beginning with coverage at 1:30 a.m. Eastern time on Thursday. I'll be sure to be watching. Rex, you have a great week. Look forward to catching up with you next week, where we recap the Open Championship and look ahead to what's left of this season. Take care, guys.